This is Valerie Harms, Dreaming of Animals, Dialogue Between Self and World, April 11th, 2008. This is the audio track from a DVD. The DVD is available in the library at the Young Society of Seattle.
This one. She has a long background in Jungian psychology and is an intensive journal consultant and former science editor at the National Audubon Society. So she's done a lot of workshops with the Jung societies and with people all over the world, and has moved from the East Coast to Montana in order to live her talk, which is, you know, working with animals and being close to animals and dreaming of animals. So please welcome Valerie Harms, our speaker for this evening.
I'm just glad to be here because, you know, with the thousands of airlines canceled, I got here yesterday and was able to get acclimated and in a very nice way and enjoy the flowers. And so, and I'm very happy to be here too, because you all have a great reputation and you have a great presence on the web and do wonderful programs. So I'm thrilled to be here. So, first I'm going to give you a prelude, and then we'll go into specific animal archetypes. An Indian chief said, "If you talk to the animals, they will talk with you, and you will know each other. If you do not talk to them, you will not know them. And what you do not know, you will fear, and what one fears, one destroys." Yay, are you with me on that? I hate and fear the threats of extinctions to animals, because animals have been vital to us since we existed on this planet. And I know you are too. For no matter where we live, we dwell amidst a number of other species populations with invisible dynamic links that originated way before our ancestral family appeared millions of years ago. And just think of how... you know, if big bodies of water symbolize the collective unconscious, what the crash of fish like the salmon, you know, is telling us. Our lives depend on the crucial functions animals fulfill for the earth. In breathing, they produce and maintain oxygen and other gases in the atmosphere. In eating, some maintain a balance of populations between predators and prey. In defecating, they recycle nutrients and help produce fertile soil. Burrowing, they churn and till the soil. Some help regulate water supplies. Some pollinate plants, disperse seeds, and decompose organic waste. In breeding and evolving, animals broaden the gene pool, making possible more medicines, foods, and other resources essential to all living beings. The larger the genetic diversity, the more possible options we have for optimum survival on this planet. When I had researched this material for my book, The National Audubon Society Almanac of the Environment, The Ecology of Everyday Life, the most eminent scientists declared that a fifth or more of the species of plants and animals could vanish or be doomed to early extinction by the year 2020 unless better efforts are made to save them. Within the next 50 years, up to 50% of all species could be gone, a severe warning that the relationship between humans and other animals was wounded. We can do better than this and change those patterns. I also know from my reading and many psychological groups that people dream frequently about animals, often injured. And yet when people talk about animals in their background, from pets to wolf watching, they become excited with affection and wonder. No amount of environmental red flags seem to affect people as much as when their own hearts are stirred. I thus decided to explore how our relationship to animals, both wild and familiar, could be healed for the benefit of our lives and the fate of this earth. The result is that book and programs. Ever since humans have lived among other animals, we have had ideas, what I call daydreams, and sleep dreams about them. Our fantasies, feelings, and images have influenced our behavior, and because we project them, they have consequences for our inner and outer worlds. Jung gave us the terms collective unconscious and archetype, and it's interesting that Freud was a biologist and Jung, once an aspiring archaeologist, they believed that the deepest layers of the psyche were rooted in nature. In the realm of the ecological unconscious, humans and nature are interconnected, all beings related. But human attitudes over time show radical shifts. For a long time, around 60,000 to 10,000 BC, when people lived amidst animals, animals were hunted, feared, and revered. Animals tutored early peoples. The hieroglyphs of the Egyptians were based on animal images. American Indians viewed them as extended family. But the Judeo-Christian tradition gave people dominion over animals, and as culture became more agricultural, animals were viewed as property. Think of how the word chattel means property, and it comes from cattle. René Descartes, the 17th century philosopher, claimed that beasts could not think. People began to see themselves as superior to other animals. The philosopher Gregory Bateson declared that this divided notion of self was the great conceptual error of Western civilization. What can be done to heal this deadly division? The answer lies partly in becoming more introspective about our own attitudes and in expanding our definition of community to include other species. While the early psychologists, Freud, Adler, and Jung, for them, the self in relation to the personal family was the main focus. Now it is necessary to see the personal self in relation not only to family, but to larger landscapes and their inhabitants. As self-regulating mechanisms of the psyche, dreams and contemplative imagery comment on a subjective situation by showing us what we are not aware of. The self that is synonymous with the center of our being is often symbolized by an animal that possesses the divine energy that exists within us and nature. Are you with me on that one? Okay. Dreams take us away from the surface of life to its deeper meaning. They correct our course in life like a wind blowing our sails. They warn us about danger, predict some future events, and convey illuminating insights. Always the aim seems to be the wise, more optimum attitude toward life. Myths are the collective dreams of a culture over time. In the myths and dreams section of my book, I offer examples of specific animals and their meaning in people's lives. The question to keep in mind with images that resonate is, why are the animals appearing now? And what do they have to say about healing one's life and the larger world? The problem pointed to is often familiar and relevant to all of us. Engaging in inner relationship with animals, they become powerful allies when we want to change our lives and restore our strength, dignity, and well-being. We can become our own shamans. It's up to us. The benefits are enormous and empowering. Letting animals into your heart sharpens senses, evokes visceral vitality, and awakens imaginations. The more we understand animals, the more we understand ourselves. Animal intelligence offers instruction in leadership and problem solving. Animals show us how to protect ourselves, how to be direct and upfront with anger, fear, tranquility, how to follow our hunger and real needs, They show us how to be courageous as well as how not to hold grudges. They show us how to be alone. Identifying with them can center us in our solar plexus, make us tougher, less naive. Feeling kinship with them lessens our loneliness because we have an expanded sense of community within and without. Let's go forward then and revision our ties to animals by looking at the habits, the art, and the legends of animals. Let us look into individual psyches and work with our hopes, fears, and sorrows, realizing that our pains are not separate from the world's. If we want to live in harmony with all, then we need to be aware of our thought forms about animals, for our destiny on Earth is more entwined than we may realize. So now I'll go into the animal archetypes, and in order to grasp them, you have to look at their biological reality as well as their cultural meaning over time. So this will be, you know, leaping through that. Starting with bears, our grandmother and grandfather of all. Its ancestors go back about 20 million years. At first the size of a small dog, they grew larger and traveled to all the continents, modifying as they went and becoming what we call black bear, grizzly, sloth bear, sun bear, spectral bear. Capable of weighing 1,000 pounds, grizzlies stand flat-footed like us. When unthreatened, they move about calmly, poking into berry bushes, tussling with kin. While having a strong odor themselves, their noses can detect carrion 9 miles away. If you come into their territory or carry a gun, then they become ferocious and pop their jaw, yawn, lay back their ears, weave their head, and woof. One blow from a paw can knock the head of a buffalo off. Bears can also be kind and gentle. Bears may be more irritable if they are carrying around a chronic pain, which they often do. They've been known to live with gunshot embedded in their lungs. They get abscessed teeth, probably due to their penchant for sweet foods. Losing their teeth in old age can result in starvation. They are also plagued by internal parasites and numerous injuries. Yet they indulge in much play and wrestling, playing tag, tossing sticks, rolling around, and grasping paws. To satisfy their huge appetites, they need to forage over large territories. Bears eat ants, cutworm moths, and ladybugs. 2 quarts of yellow jackets may go down. Bears gorge on fish, including those salmon. The female bear gives birth to the cubs in the den after about 8 weeks of gestation. The cubs' long period of intimacy with their mother will make them far more intelligent than most animals. When they emerge in the spring, they will stay very close to their mother for 2 or 3 years until she turns them away in order to conceive new young. Like us, bears dwell at the top of the food chain. Researchers estimate that a population of 2,000 grizzly bears requires about 50,000 square miles of undisturbed habitat in order to have a 95% chance of the population's survival for 100 years. Because grizzlies nowadays can't find that much contiguous land, their numbers have severely dwindled, 99% in the lower 48 states. An activist said, quote, "It's as if they've been locked into the bathroom of the house and can't get from one room to another and are killed if they go out the door," end quote. While bears may have lost in the battle with us for territory, we are not the winners. Grizzlies are considered a keystone species, meaning that their presence indicates an ecosystem's health. Their failure to survive indicates that forests, rivers, and other animals are perishing too. Conversely, preserving adequate habitat for bear means clean and safe wilderness from which all life benefits. In the long term, bears do more for us alive than dead. It is a terrible irony that while countless fake teddy bears, pictures of Smokey the Bear and Winnie the Pooh pervade our society, the situation of real bears is so difficult. We can do better than that. Lost teachings of the bear. In early times, people compared their lives to bears and learned to survive them, from them. Recognizing shared tendencies for clowning, bluffing, stealing, and lazing around unless aggravated, people followed bears during migrations and learned where and how to find certain berries and medicinal plants. People learned to hoard food for winter. Bear caves made into temples have been found in the Alps, dating from 50,000 BCE. We have one in Montana that is several miles long, by the way, that shows evidence of being used for rituals. In the cult of the master bear, native peoples did not call bears by their name, but used some more deferential term, such as grandfather or grandmother, honey paws, crooked tail, or the old man with the fur garment. Native Americans believed that because animals were created before people, they were considered closer to the Great Spirit and thus more powerful. The bear's withdrawal, fasting, and emergence formed the basis for spiritual initiation rites of societies around the world. In some places, people literally go into caves and fast in order to have a vision that will help them have with a crisis in their lives. A model of resurrection, the bear not only awakens as if from the dead in spring, but also with young. This event tells us that psychologically we too can return from the darkest hours with spirit reborn. The association of bears with females is echoed as far back as the Greek reverence for a bear goddess and the way young girls danced in her honor. Artemis was the Greek goddess of wild nature, and the bear was one of her major incarnations or companions. It was Artemis who killed Callisto, one of her nymphs, for becoming impregnated by Zeus, and then, feeling repentant, placed her and her child among the stars as the constellation Ursa Major and Ursa Minor. Grizzlies primarily stand for wilderness, where mettle and imagination are tested. Because bears dominate the largest terrains, metaphorically they are like CEOs of corporations. Their leadership qualities are not lost on company executives who invoke bears as mentors to improve company morale, help staff get over the fear of public speaking, work together cooperatively, or to solve hard problems, not only with logic, but with heart. In a dream or vision of bears, I'd like to tell the story of Doug Peacock, who wrote a book called Grizzly Years. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he, traumatized by months of brutal slayings, he was too anxiety-ridden to settle back into ordinary social routines and sought the solace of wilderness, as if in its rigor and solitude he could find a match for his feelings. And it was from the bear and identifying with the bear in its facing of extreme circumstances that he lived for a long time, and it helped him out of that trauma. The image of giving birth to a bear cub augurs greatness in the sense of significance, not necessarily fame. Because polar bears have a different ecology from grizzlies, those distinctions must be taken into account when they appear in dreams. A man who dreamed of a polar bear at a time when he loved a woman with whom he worked But while she did not return his love, they still had a long project to complete. Every day he would go to work and come home feeling as if his body was sliced and bleeding. Although she was pleasant enough to him, his unfulfilled desire made him feel frustrated and desolate. When he had the dream about the polar bear, he realized that in this situation he was living in a cold region. While the atmosphere was frosty, the polar bear was able to not only survive in it, but to play in it with warmth and energy. He found a picture of a polar bear who wore an extremely beneficent expression. The polar bear sustained him through this period. Bear images give us the strength and awareness to be fierce when we need to protect our territory, and generous and playful as well. They are guardian spirits who show us how to satisfy big hungers and stand tall and broad. To lose the presence of bears in our lives, inner and outer, would be to lose a marvelous greatness of spirit. Now turning to birds. They're the most popular of animals. People keep meticulous track of sightings, photograph them, and present endless slide shows to rapt audiences. A huge commercial industry has formed around them, including franchise stores, guidebooks, ecotours, and hotels in remote corners of the world. Because they are easily observable, more scientific studies have been done on them than any other animal. Charles Darwin's study of finches on the Galapagos Islands advanced the theory of evolution. Based on birds' lives, scientists have taught us much about population and community ecology. On a biological level, we exhibit behavior similar to birds. In the mating game, for instance, we wear bright clothes like plumage to attract the opposite sex. We make coy glances and strut our stuff, especially on the dance floor. In our shared vocabulary, are soft wooing sounds as well as triumphant cries. Males like to spread their seed around and females to make the best deal. Our species, as with birds, deals with promiscuity and a full range of partnering, including monogamy, polygamy, and female with female bonds. The way some small, seemingly vulnerable creatures fly thousands of miles, enduring harsh weather patterns, navigating their course so they reach the same place year after year, inspires us to try harder in our lives. As Emily Dickinson, the poet, wrote, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches on our soul." From the time people interacted with them, birds have been endowed with sacred traditions. Shamans transformed themselves into birds so their souls would fly to the divine source for instructions on how to heal. Birds symbolize transcendence over material life and release from fixed patterns, the bridge between the human world and the divine, heaven and earth. Birds' wings suggest the glory, beauty, sublimity, exaltation, favor, or help from on high. A bird in flight pictured the soul enamored of its highest ideal in prayer and contemplation. American Indians believed that birds had wisdom because their soaring enabled a broad perspective, the ability to see the overall picture. Birds have been extraordinary muses. Torrents of sketches, photographs, paintings, and sculptures have been created about them. Throughout the ages, birds appear from Paleolithic cave paintings, Egyptian tombs, and great Greek vases to art in Europe and Asia. Bird masks were made in tribal society. In 20th century sculpture, Brancusi carved sleek birds in chrome and stone, capturing the modern zeitgeist. Bird song is virtually synonymous with lyrical poetry. Most of all, birds have inspired music. Wagner wrote an aria about owls, ravens, jackdaws, and magpies for Die Meistersinger. The cuckoo and nightingale are heard in Beethoven's Sixth Symphony. In Bizet's Carmen, the opening words are, quote, "Love is a rebel bird that no one is able to tame," unquote. Birds were archetypal deities because in early times, eggs represented fertility. From 27,000 to 10,000 BCE, goddesses were made to look like birds, with breasts thrust forward and enlarged buttocks that cradled eggs. The planet, in its continually giving birth to new forms of life, was considered a cosmic egg. Birds germinated and carried the essence of life and the universe. Bird goddesses were also portrayed as spinners and weavers because of birds' skill in nest building. In Ecuador and Peru, people still paint birds onto their spindles. For Egyptians, hawks came to stand for the portion of every soul called Ba, which referred to one's immortal spirit and outlasted the body. Egyptian deities were often portrayed with human heads on the body of a falcon. Every bird has special significance. Let's take a quick look at crows, eagles, and owls. Many cultures respect crows for their intelligence and watchfulness, their raucous caws warn of dangers. Their mimicking, clownish, and provocative antics have made them known as tricksters. Because they are black, they have received projections of melancholy and the soul's necessary descent into darkness or depression before the coming of light to new potentials. Along with the vulture and raven, because they feed on carrion, they were a common symbol for death. And as we know, Van Gogh's last painting was the flock of crows flying over a field. Because eagles looked like noble heroes, they were associated with power and war. Some of those who incorporated the strength, courage, and penetration of eagles on their emblems include Zeus, Vishnu, Horus of Egypt, Mithra of Persia, the Viking Odin, King Solomon, military Rome, Napoleon, and of course the United States. The ancient Aztecs believed that when warriors died in sacrifice, their eagle god fed on their hearts. And in the 12th century, their chief god told the exiled people to settle at a place where they found an eagle perched on a cactus eating a snake. That place was Mexico City. Eagles are able to swoop down into the water and retrieve food. This ability is like being able to dip into the unconscious and not be overwhelmed or inundated by it, but able to scoop out a bit of sacred nourishment. You know, in that Eros and Psyche story, one of the tasks of Psyche is to get a flask of water from the river Lethe, and it's one of those impossible things. The river is, you know, at the bottom of some craggy mountains, and she can't do that. But the eagle comes to her rescue and can carry the flask down for her, and see, she gets a little bit. Eagles bring the strength to fight the inner demons of confusion, despair, jealousy, and revenge, as well as the outer demons of competitors, swindlers, and ignoramuses. Instead of doing harm to ourselves or others, we can use eagle energy to transform the situation. The eagle's strong toes show firmness, the ability to grasp powerfully. Their strong beaks cut, tear, and crush. They teach how to hover, dive when appropriate, and use the winds of life to our benefit. A woman who was embroiled in a conflict with others at her office dreamed of an eagle telling her, "You are in danger of becoming fat, squishy pulp for predators." She took heed and acted. Because women frequently have trouble asserting themselves in confrontative situations, an animal ally can be extremely helpful. Where the eagle was associated with light, The owl was associated with dark night, mystery, and graveyards. One medieval name for the owl was night hag, which meant a witch in bird form. The owl is still associated with witchery on Halloween. Yet the owl's wisdom did not go unnoticed. The owl symbolized the Greek goddess Athena. Owls were thought to possess clairvoyance and magic because they could hear in the dark so well and fly silently. The way their tufts of feathers look like ears, but are not, gave them a reputation for hearing what is unspoken. They can see what is hidden. Owls teach us how to quietly enter a place and go about your business. They accomplish tasks with timing and skill, not intimidation, constantly listening, watching, and waiting. In many bird dreams, a wounded wing suggests an injury to your ability to get your ideas or spirit off the ground and flying. A nest of eggs implies creative ideas needing to be tended. Mating with a spectacular bird like a cardinal suggests acquiring dash and brilliance, the ability to stand out and be noticed. Often birds appear trapped in dreams. In their lives, many species of birds, especially migratory, are extremely threatened, if not legally endangered, because our development of roads, towns, pesticides, open oil pits, electromagnetic cabling, and other obstacles have eliminated feeding and breeding grounds. Many stopover sites have disappeared. Being thus forced out, birds have perished. In our lives, we get hemmed in by work pressure, traffic, the feeling there is no escape. Is it not apparent that if we could give birds room and help make their lives more satisfactory, we'd be healing ourselves too? Now I'm going to turn to deer, which you might have in your backyard. The proud, aloof, starving deer. For all their shared history, humans have mostly regarded deer as prey and hunted them. The connection between pray and prey is interesting in regard to the theme of hunting. To pray is to petition God or make an offering to the gods. It is a law of nature, or God, that we eat, prey, to survive. For many cultures, the act of hunting and eating another was done in a sacred manner with a sense of sacrifice. A challenging hunt was also supposed to strengthen one. Deer made eminent martyrs to this cause. The history of hunting is virtually synonymous with the history of deer. Here's a brief survey. Ancient people's hunts were accompanied by rituals and sacrifice, which they believed would alleviate their guilt and prolong the life of the species. Tribal cultures used deer fully, their meat for food, their skin and bones to make clothing, shelter, blankets, fishing lines, needles, scrapers, and ornaments. In Paleolithic cave paintings, deer are depicted with reverent majesty. The stags have antlers with branches that crown them like rays of the sun. The ancient Greeks considered hunting an epic act and the deer an important symbol of heroism, as can be seen on their marvelous vases. The early Romans denounced the Greek version as overblown. For them, hunting was an ordinary farm chore, and deer were flighty cowards. But theirs was the first culture to manifest anti-hunting sentiments. Before the 10th century, small hunters hunted more or less freely on their own land. But as new techniques of agriculture yielded new crops and population, the forest was cleared by axe and plow to make more farmland available. The aristocrats then increasingly usurped hunting rights, putting the remaining patches of land off limits to peasants. thereby keeping the land for themselves as royal hunting preserves. Hunting thus became an elaborate ritual of the elite. The peasantry, who were punished for taking game, developed heroes such as Robin Hood, who robbed many deer from the rich to give to the poor. From the 11th to the 14th century, deer were idealized as the object of a noble hunt. Think about how in late medieval and Renaissance art and literature, down through the 16th century, the deer hunt also became a prominent metaphor for erotic love with the knights and their ladies. Deer were so magnificent and vulnerable, so easy to sacrifice. The death of a noble stag became a tragedy. A crucified Christ was often depicted as a hunted deer with a cross between his horns. In 1511, Erasmus denounced hunting as, quote, bestial amusement. Others claimed it was a form of oppression to peasants, although nobody said it was oppressive to deer. Montaigne wrote that, quote, foolish pride and stubbornness made people set themselves before other animals. While hunting had been attacked partly to rebel against the upper class, people had also grown to think about animals differently, since many farmers then lived and worked side by side with them. They shared an affinity that was quite different from the awe the cave artists felt. The scientific revolution of the 1600s and the next three centuries further eroded the animal-human distinctions. When animals were perceived by humans as more than non-rational automatons and thus deserving of moral consideration, anti-hunting sentiments increased. In the 18th century, animal suffering prompted teachings on being kind to animals. Today, people are still divided over whether hunting should be extolled or condemned. The top reason usually given for hunting is enjoyment of the outdoors. And indeed, hunters tend to know more about wildlife than anti-hunters. One hunter, David Peterson, says that, quote, he kills elk in order to bring their strength into my body, their beauty into my home, their wildness into my heart. I hunt elk in order to be elk. Now, I want to talk about deer and answering the call. Picture that buck with the crown of antlers looming out of the bare trees. His tan arched neck gracefully supports his triangular head. His big eyes look into ours. He is noble, still, and watchful. Infusing this simple image in a dream or vision is an atmosphere of commanding majesty, one that has been felt deeply since humans observed deer. Deer possess a delicate tension, and because they quickly spring away, they teach us about backing off from control, letting someone or something be free. Lovers know this well. Building trust takes time. In Man and His Symbols, edited by Carl Jung, and Yolanda Jacobi describes the case of Henry, a reticent, bookish 25-year-old engineer. In part of a dream, this is the dream, he walks along a willow-bordered brook, enters a wood, whereupon a doe runs away. Jacobi writes, the quote, the wood is a symbol of an unconscious area, a dark place where animals live. At first a doe, a symbol of shy, fugitive, innocent womanliness, emerges, but only for a moment. The man who fears the communications of his inner depths, like Henry, is as much afraid of the feminine element in himself as he is of real woman. At one moment he is fascinated by her, at another, he tries to escape. It's important to realize, that was the end of that quote, it's important to realize that the doe represents a way he acts toward himself first. As such a man becomes more at ease with actual women, his psyche will reward him with a dream in which the doe does not run away, but may in time teach him more about the nuances of love. An important characteristic of deer is that they do not travel in a straight line in their perpetual search for nourishment and shelter. We might reflect on the deviating paths we too must take through our lives, using our intuition to make decisions or coping with what fate brings us. The unknown future often appears like entering a dark wood. The deer crossing our threshold in a dream or vision may invite us to follow, that is, to enter or embark on a new adventure. Thus, pursuit of the deer can be a form of answering the inner call, the first step of the hero's journey. The call can be experienced as a vision of a new artwork, the need to move across country, or the design of a garden, any sense of crossing a threshold to new life. The hunt can be viewed as a metaphor for the next steps and the difficulties or good fortune along the way. Having begun as the answer to the voice of the spirit within, often in the midst of struggle and despair, the quest leads to the actualization of his yet unrealized potential. Meditating on one's dreams and following the leads of one's personal imagery take one on this journey. Another vision I'd like to mention is a painting or poem is a dream given form, and deer are a beloved subject. Frida Kahlo, the Mexican 20th century artist, painted an image called The Wounded Deer, which you would have seen. It shows a deer's body pierced with arrows, causing blood to drip. The deer's head is her face. It has large antlers, so she's androgynous. Presenting herself with the strength and majesty of a stag, she identified with the sacrificial deer. In her life, she combated numerous operations on her back, often wearing stiff braces, often unable to rise out of bed. And yet she painted memorable works that marked her trials. Her self-portrait might well express much about our relation to animals today. Since we are dependent on them, we are, to some extent, one with them. When we bleed, or when they bleed, so do we. Now, I want to move a little closer to home, to our pets. And I was going to do just dogs, but I know there are cat lovers here too, so I figured I can't not do cats too, at least briefly. In the Tree of Life, cats and dogs split apart about 40 million years ago and followed different lines of development. Cats became stealthy hunters, dogs feisty runners. Domestication inspired their human owners to bring them into their homes, even beds, rather than board them outside. For the most part, we stopped eating them. We made them into friends and made eye contact with them, which wild animals cannot allow. Pets care about our love or approval. Wild animals don't. The negative view of pets concerns our excessive breeding of them to make them into our playthings. The positive view is that they bring us to a higher level of happiness. We engage with them in play and communication, often regarded as part of the family. Pets make us less lonely, providing companionship for ourselves, our elders, and children. Studies overwhelmingly show that living with pets is beneficial to our health and morale. Is it ever? In talking quietly to cats and dogs, touching, stroking them, our blood pressure lowers and we become gentler and more relaxed. The famous cancer doctor, Dr. Bernie Siegel, says that he looks to dogs for inspiration on how to behave with an unconditional love and spontaneity. Although many of us love our pets, that doesn't mean we always treat them well. The problem comes not from appreciating their gestures or sounds, Some think of pets as backward and foolish in comparison with us and berate them when their behavior does not suit our expectations. Many pets, of course, are starved, left behind when families move, kicked out when no longer wanted, shot at for fun. They end up at the animal pound, which is sometimes like a concentration camp, where millions are euthanized annually. Dogs and their wagging tails. Dogs inherited a number of qualities from their ancient progenitor, the wolf. They still maintain wolf-like traits, such as their sense of play and loyalty and scent marking. With olfactory areas 14 times larger than ours, dogs smell 100 times better than we do. And the skills that animals have, you know, might be looked at as a way of, you know, seeing, humbling ourselves a little bit because other animals have skills that we don't. They can see better at night than we do, and since their eyes are on the side of their heads, they have a wider range of vision. They can hear things from four times the distance we can, especially the higher frequencies. Their ability to distinguish among frequencies helps them recognize your footsteps or car from afar. Dogs know the smell of fear. When sensing others, they are very aware of states of mind inside the physical body. They've been known to obey an owner's thought order while it was still a thought, before it was expressed. Dogs are lively communicators. They even smile. We see it when their faces relax, their ears are low, eyes half shut, lips soft and parted, and chin high. Their whole bodies wriggle with joy. Elizabeth Marshall Thomas wrote The Hidden Life of Dogs to describe her observations of 11 dogs and what they pursue on their own if left to their own devices. At night, when her dogs were out, she followed them. She found that they navigated through traffic with ease. Their main interest appeared not to be a search for sex, people, food, or hunting, but to find other dogs. She believes that they have a memory from their wolf ancestry of circling and dominating each other. The dogs would immediately establish rank like wolves do. Think of ourselves, too, when we gather in groups. To what extent do we make comments and connections to establish our status? What makes us feel low down or superior to others? Do we not defer to those who we consider higher in rank? Many observers believe that dogs' greatest desire is to have a sense of belonging, to give and receive love. Another great desire is to do work. Border collies protect sheep or anything that moves. Rescue dogs search avalanches for victims. Dogs in war carry messages, find the wounded, go through tough basic training. Many a war veteran has wept over the brave deeds of their dogs. They're trained to sniff out drugs. They've been actors in movies. They're highly therapeutic to sick people, prisoners, the handicapped, showing a great deal of patience and tolerance when they get confused signals. In the past, dogs were also eaten, for example, by the Mayas and the Aztecs, as well as in the South Pacific Islands, where there was a lack of game. Dogs were also consumed and relished by the Lewis and Clark expedition crew who explored the lands west of the Mississippi. In some cultures, observation of dogs eating corpses and their strange reacting to rabies made them seem loathsome and vile. Among Asians, dog saliva is an extreme form of pollution. In Indonesia, mongrels with scabby hips and dangling tumors roam the streets and are regarded as reincarnated criminals. Cats, as we know, can be remarkably still and quiet. Approaching life with reserve and caution, they put their feet pads down gently, often leaving no print. They will lie curled up with tails tucked, paws folded inward, unresponsive to being called. They possess themselves. Cats watch us closely. Many owners say cats are sensitive to their moods and respond in remarkable ways. Their intelligence includes their ability to comfort, pain, and grief. They understand what objects are for, like when you turn the doorknob or bring out the suitcase. Unlike dogs, cats refuse to be approved of or disapproved. They generally will not tolerate behavioral researchers' attempt to make them do things for food rewards. It's hard to manipulate a cat. The evolution of cats is inextricably bound to the history of human civilization. Ancient Egypt is the generally acknowledged cradle of the first tamed cats around 2600 BC. These cats were highly respected for their many charms. They were used in the hunting of ducks and fish. The Egyptians, having invented long-term storage of grain in silos, found cats to be avid protectors of their granaries, where mice and rats gathered. By the 20th to 22nd dynasty, cats became totems for their protective and feminine qualities. Women wanted to copy the cat's concerted gaze, slanting eyes, supple loins, noble posture, and eroticism. Bastet, or Bast, was the cat-headed goddess, often shown with kittens. She was a lover of pleasure, music, and dance. Cats were embalmed when they died. Anyone who killed a cat was liable to a death penalty. As agricultural society spread, cats were stolen and then bred by the Arabs, Greeks, and eventually Europeans, Indians, and Japanese. Cats were instrumental in the settling of America, as they saved food from rats and the people from plagues. Considered precious commodities, they were bought for gold and listed in wills. Cats' low point in popularity was caused by Christians in the medieval period in Europe and 17th century in America. Probably because of the sacred value attached to them by earlier matriarchal cultures, these Europeans conjectured that cats were the spawn of Satan. Their howling was of the devil. Cats, especially black, were said to be able to change form into witches. As a result, witch hunts in Europe and colonial America led to vast numbers of cats being murdered. Terrified cats would be put in wicker baskets and burned. Many were skinned alive. Of course, the women associated with the cats were burned too. Now, in regard to dreams and visions of dogs and cats, the daily presence of pets means that they are the most likely animals to be used in dreams to illustrate certain issues of our personal lives because they're so close to us. Since dreams compensate for our conscious state of mind, usually the animal shows us a conflict we dimly recognize. In order to correct our course of action, we need first to become aware of it. A common motif is looking for a dog. We know how dogs trot along sidewalks, smelling this and that, greeting people, joining other dogs. With their tails high in the air and wagging, they look eager, curious, hungry. So in such a dream of looking for a dog, one possibility is that you could use a dose of the freedom and spontaneous wandering that a dog has. You need to be more of a loyal companion to yourself, the way a dog is called man's best friend. If you are not, the situation will get worse, and you're likely to have a dream of a dog lying near death or already dead. Then serious consideration will have to be paid to how in your life you are excluding the expression of friendly, eager curiosity in your life and make changes. On the other hand, it's a very good sign when you and your dream dog gaily stroll along. Dreams also frequently show animals in need of rescue, and the dream will be specific as to how. The dream may show the dog wounded in the leg or tied up and choking. A wound means that particular spot needs care. The leg has to do with the ability to move. Having its throat cut off means you are blocking your expressiveness, even your natural breathing, a very destructive condition. You may be called to attend to the wisdom of your body more. Remember that dreams are about oneself, but may be about the animal's condition too. So also reflect on the situation of the actual dog, if it's your pet. While dogs have been associated with the open strength of masculinity, cats suggest more of the hidden mysteries of femininity. A woman dreamed that a man she desires runs over her cat with a car. This woman's eroticism, purring warmth, and sexual receptivity toward this man are painfully crushed. The man she loves has told her that he no longer wants to be with her. The dream is a dire warning that she must rescue this cat and not let it be killed because of his attitude. She must take extra precautions to protect her valuable qualities. So you have a dream of the cat hunching, hissing, and clawing. This seems a deceptively simple image. If it appears in regard to another person, you can sense how defensive you feel toward that person. The dream could be warning you of that person's mean intentions. It behooves you to be as hostile as a cat in unfavorable situations. Another option lies in how the moods of both men and women, which can be cozy and comfortable until they get jealous and resentful about not getting what they want, change and then they suddenly attack. You may need to think about your needs and how to fulfill them more. Okay, so we'll stop there and take a break, and then have questions and answers about various issues that you thought of, and anything else, certain other things too I might mention.
And that is the end of the recording. This recording was made on DVD, and it included some images. The DVD is available in the library at the C.G. Jung Society, Seattle. The copyright is C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.